Welcome back to Project Independence and You. I'm your host, Rebecca Miller, and our co-host today is Otto Loos.
Very nice. I'm glad I'm here.
We're glad to have you. And we have a backup co-host today that didn't know she was going to be, but yet here she is, Paula Yule.
Here I am. Hello.
Welcome, Paula.
Thank you.
Happy birthday again, Christina. That's just a catch tag for today. We've been speaking, having a very interesting conversation with Antonio Petrish. We've been talking about the women's suffrage movement, and I know before we went to break, Otto, during break, we were talking about an event this weekend.
Well, there was an event that took place at the Suffolk County Historical Society, and I was just curious about that and the name, Book and Bottle.
That's the title that they use for their different programs that they present. I don't really know. I think it's historical, the bottle part, because there was no drinking involved.
Maybe they did have a bottle. Yeah.
But it's a wonderful facility. It's out in Riverhead, and we had a very nice turnout. And it's always nice to talk to people that are in historical societies because they have such a great interest in it and a great experience themselves with historical research and historical issues. So, yeah, it was good.
You know, I know you have several books under your belt, and you're not asking us to do this, but it's probably nice to be able to sell one of these books once in a while because you did a lot of work.
It is nice.
How would somebody go about...
It doesn't happen too often.
Well, how would somebody go about getting... You have three books now that I recall, right?
Yes, you could just go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and just type my name in and the books will come up.
Which is A-N-T-O-N-I-A-P-E-T-R-A-S-H.
Right. Yes.
Right.
And, you know, we'll definitely, with Talk of the Town, we'll talk a little bit more. We have a segment toward the end of the show where we talk a lot about what's going on in the town, and we'll, you know, definitely mention your books. But I just want to mention, and what's the website?
It's longislandwomansuffrage.com.
Okay, so if they have any questions, they can look on this website, which is there's a whole bunch of information. So let's talk about Long Island women and the suffrage movement. Where did things happen? Where did it come from on Long Island? Where are the key places, and who were some of the key women?
Well, one of the good things about Long Island is it's so close to New York City, and many of the wealthy women lived in New York City and then had estates on Long Island. For instance, one of the biggest proponents and supporters was Alva Vanderbilt Belmont. She was married to Willie K. Vanderbilt, who was the grandson of Cornelius Vanderbilt, and she divorced him in 1895. She was a very feisty, decisive woman. She was very strong-willed, which was good for the suffrage movement. Mm-hmm. She divorced Willie K. and she married Oliver Belmont, and Oliver died, and so between the two of them, she had a very vast fortune. And she had nothing to do with her time, so she decided to work for suffrage. And when we say work for suffrage, she just poured herself and millions of dollars into it. She decided that they had a headquarters in the Midwest that they should have. Their headquarters should be in New York City, so she went and bought them a building in New York City and moved them out into New York City. She built a mansion in Sands Point called Beacon Towers, primarily to host suffragists and suffrage leaders, and to have conventions and parties and fundraisers there. And then she went down to Washington, D.C. and bought a house down there for them, which is now the Sewell Belmont Museum. And it was just designated last year as a national park site by President Obama. So she was very, very active and very pushy woman, which was good because that's what it took. She was one, and then, as I said, Harriet Burton Laidlaw and her husband were in Sands Point. Harriet was very influential in having the New York State pass women's suffrage in 1917. That's sort of what she concentrated on because they thought that that would tip the balance for the amendment, the national amendment. But there were hundreds of women that worked throughout the island. They had conventions in Long Beach. They had parades in Hempstead. They had... Out on the East End, they were very active in suffrage, but they were very also active in anti-suffrage on the East End, Sag Harbor and those areas. I really don't know why that was such a center for anti-suffragists, but there were just a lot of women and men throughout the island. And it wasn't easy because Long Island at that point was an agricultural community. Mm-hmm. So the roads weren't world established, and in the beginning of the 20th century, they had just the cars were not like today's transportation or communication systems. So it wasn't easy for them, but they persisted.
Why would people be anti-suffrage? What would be the reasoning behind thinking that?
That's a very good question. There was a couple of reasons. First of all, some women felt that their privileges would be compromised, that men would not always look at them with such a protective air if they were competing with them politically in some way. It was thought that politics was not an appropriate place for women. And then some men just didn't want their wives to have the power, so they supported it. And then there was also a faction from the liquor industry that supported anti-suffrage because they were afraid women would vote for prohibition. But the irony is that prohibition was passed in 1918 before most women could vote for it. So
women had nothing to do with it.
Right.
No.
Was there any particular faith community that supported the movement? Like, I know in some cases historically, like Quakers, or was there?
Well, Quakers always supported equality for men and women.
Right.
And that did spill over into suffrage. Susan B. Anthony was a Quaker.
Right. That's what I thought, that there was.
They always, again, did support equality.
Because I imagine you had to have a lot of different networks of support.
Yes.
You know, like, especially you have some very, these wealthy heroines.
The wealthy women,
who
yes.
Who put their money and their time and their energy. But I would think you also have to have a base, you know, supporting.
Yes.
And I was
and
wondering how
instance,
that worked.
The young women that worked in the factories in the city, Harriet Burton Laidlaw and many of the wealthier women wanted to impress upon every woman what the vote would do for her.
Right.
So they would go into the factories, or they would go when the factory women were demonstrating, and they would support them.
Wow, that's great.
And show them, try to show them that if they could vote, perhaps they could better their own working conditions, and also perhaps they could do away with child labor, because that was a big problem in the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
So the leaders just felt that every single woman should be told and have it shown to her what the vote could do for her.
Right.
And that would make a better base of support.
Did they have anything symbolic, like we have the pink hats? You know, so you see somebody, and we saw the March on Washington and pink hats. You kind of could distinguish. Was there anything that the suffragettes wore or used as a symbol? To say this
is suffragette
what we support.
Was the British term.
Oh, okay.
And suffragist was the American term.
Suffragist, okay.
The suffragists felt that the ETT at the end of the suffragette was diminutive.
Okay.
So they preferred suffragists.
Okay. But, I learned something every day.
Yes.
That's great. Okay.
But they had sashes.
Mm-hmm.
There was a variety of colors. The English used green and purple. Many of them used white.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yellow was a big color.
Okay.
So they used colors and sashes. And if you see some of the pictures of the parades, the more established groups were all in white.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's.
But.
I have seen that.
There wasn't any one particular
symbol.
Thing.
Okay.
There
I was
were
wondering.
Buttons. There were, again, sashes, pennants.
Right. I just thought it was interesting how we had this pink hat. Like, there was something visual when you looked at this sea of people.
You knew where you stood.
Right.
What it was
about. And it's market. It's really, it's marketing also,
yes,
you know. And
publicity.
I just was wondering. Yeah, okay.
I think the sashes
something.
Probably would be one of the most visible.
But that
ways.
Fight for voting started, 60 years before it ever happened? I mean, it goes way back, according to what I read.
Well, we do say the beginning was 1848 with the Seneca Falls Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I said before, women had asked for equality long before that. But that's a good beginning because no one had ever had a convention asking for equal rights for women.
Right.
It was totally off the wall. They were told that they would be ridiculously criticized, especially if they asked for the vote. And that was Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And she said, well, if we don't ask for the vote, it doesn't really matter what other rights we have if we don't have that right to vote.
Very true.
That was sort of the quasi-beginning. But again, over the centuries, women had asked for equality.
It's still going on in the world,
still going
as far
on.
As that part goes.
Yes,
for sure.
And
still
even
battling.
In this country, there are still some with attitudes that...
Yes, we do. Of course, we're very fortunate here. But there's always inequality. And we know of other places in the world where there was massive inequality. But you just have to keep pushing and keep reminding everyone and keep stressing that we have to be grateful and we have to keep working and we have to keep supporting people who support it.
Yeah,
I think
it's important. What you do is important. The fact that people, women and men for that matter, shouldn't take for granted what was done a long time ago by people to get it to this point. You know, it didn't happen by osmosis.
Yes.
It happened with a lot of people paying a very heavy price. So if you don't take advantage of that, that's wrong. You're really slapping the people in the face from way back who...
Well, it's an educational thing. Many people just aren't educated in it. It's not a big thing in the curriculum of the schools, which it should be, I think. They might teach it a little bit, but it's not stressed. So I think it's just a question of educating people. And so many people will come up to me after I speak and say, I didn't know that. I didn't know women couldn't vote. Even like the young women, they think that they could always vote.
Right.
Right.
We could always vote.
Right.
No, you couldn't.
So unbelievable. You know, we've got another guest that we have to have come back. This is fascinating. We are now down to almost 30 seconds. Did that go fast?
Yes.
Right.
Thank you so much. This is so important to have a focus on it. Thank you.
It really is. And we'll talk a little bit about it with Talk of the Town, and we'll mention your website again. And also, there's a lot of things coming up we didn't get to talk about. There's parades. Mm-hmm. There's celebrations for the 100-year celebration. So when we come back, why don't you mention your website one more time?
It's longislandwomansuffrage.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being here, and we will be back in a few minutes.